New York has been suffering through one of the hottest summers in recent history, but it certainly hasn't claimed as many lives as the 10-day heat wave that struck the city in 1896. Because there was no air conditioning or modern medicine, over 1,000 New Yorkers died. It was an election year, and the long, hot summer also had the distinction of ruining one Democrat's candidacy and aiding the rise of a young urban progressive named Theodore Roosevelt. Edward P. Cohn tells the story in his new book, Hot Time in the Old Town, The Great Heat Wave of 1896 and the Making of Theodore Roosevelt. It's published by Basic Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Cohn, an assistant professor of history at Bill Kent University, to our show today. Hello.
Thank you, Leonard.
Now, you're born in Chicago, and you're at Bill Kent University in Turkey.
That's right.
How did you come to write a book about New York City politics?
Well, I've been researching Theodore Roosevelt's early political career in New York City for a while, in many ways trying to explode the Western mythology that I think has grown up around him, that simply because he spent a couple of years out in the West, he's really a cowboy, and this can tell us a lot about his domestic and foreign policies. He was a New Yorker, born and bred, and his early political career was in New York, including when he was police commissioner during the heat wave.
It's hard to imagine a hotter July than the one we just went through. How hot was it in 1896?
Yeah, this past year, this summer, we've had three-day heat waves, five-day heat waves. It's been pretty bad. In August of 1896, this was a 10-day heat wave, 10 days, a week and a half of temperatures well into the 90s, especially at street level, 90% humidity, no wind, no relief at night, and inside the brick and stone tenements on the Lower East Side, the temperature could easily reach 120 degrees.
How many people died as a direct result of heat stroke?
Probably about 1,300. Oftentimes, the coroner and doctor's reports didn't explicitly say heat stroke or hyperthermia on the death certificate. So in many ways, you have to compare the number of deaths in August of 1896 to other years and assume that heat was a contributing factor.
And you're right that there were many deaths that resulted indirectly from the heat. When people put themselves in dangerous situations just to keep cool.
That's right. One of the things that the city did not do during the heat wave is lift the ban on sleeping in parks. Thousands of people, tens of thousands, might have been able to sleep in Central Park, got a breath of fresh air at night, get some sleep to get their strength for work the next day. The city did not do this, and so people literally slept in the street, on sidewalks, on garbage bins, and thousands of New Yorkers took to the roofs of the tenements, took to the fire escapes, and inevitably, of course, people would fall asleep, roll off, and fall to their death, some of the more tragic deaths associated with the heat wave.
And is this something that happened during other heat waves?
Yeah, there's a number of heat waves, that have struck New York City, and it's, I think, the nature of heat waves that they're such a forgotten natural disaster, and we don't learn lessons from the 1896 heat wave. There's 10 years after this, there's another heat wave in 1919, 1970s. This is a continuous element of New York City history.
Well, I remember when I was a kid and people slept on the fire escapes and on the rooftops during heat waves, had no other option because air conditioning was something that only very few very wealthy people had.
Of course. And back in 1896, as you said, no air conditioning, no electric refrigeration. And in general, the living and working conditions of 1896 are so different. Most people aren't stockbrokers and lawyers. They're manual laborers working 10 hours a day.
So were the wealthier luckier because they had cross ventilation?
They had cross ventilation. They had easy access to water. They had access to ice, which was really a life-saving luxury during the time. And somebody like Theodore Roosevelt could spend much of the heat wave out on his Sagamore Hill estate on Long Island, which was much cooler than the city.
And what was it like inside the tenements? How densely packed were they?
This was one of the most densely packed parts of the world. I mean, the tenements grew up as a way to deal with the massive immigration and urbanization. If you had a one-room tenement, that meant you probably had one family living there. If you had two rooms, you had two families.
And in some cases, weren't peace workers also working alongside the people who are living in these tenements?
Absolutely. These were places of work, cigar rollers doing textile piecework, the very poor perhaps making those paper flowers to try to sell on the street. So these were, you know, breeding grounds of poverty, of crime, of disease, just made so much worse by the heat wave.
We recently did a segment on our show looking at the impact of heat and heat stroke. It takes a few days before people start dying. But what was it like on the Lower East Side when people did start dying?
It was almost like a picture of hell on earth. You had a shortage of coffins. There is a rule that coroners have to actually inspect the body if it has not been under a doctor's care at the time of death. And the coroners are so overworked that they can't get to dead bodies in these stifling tenements, sometimes for days. There are so many funeral processions that are actually traffic jams caused by this. It's a terrible situation. People literally gasping for breath, mothers carrying babies, just trying to get some kind of wind for their sick babies in their arms.
Weren't there also corpses on the sidewalks? You had to step over them?
It wasn't quite that bad. There were certainly horse corpses. Once a body fell on the street, Theodore Roosevelt's New York police were often some of the first to come by. But you're absolutely right. There was a shortage of ambulances. And so, you know, one-third of the time, a person at Bellevue Hospital said a call for an ambulance went unanswered simply because there wasn't enough conveyance.
So we're talking about a heat wave, but we're also talking about politics, which is the other major story that you tell here. And it was the time of the Democratic Convention here in New York in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, well, Bryan had actually won the nomination at the Chicago Convention in July. But because he was a Western populist representing agrarian interests, he decided to officially accept the nomination at a massive rally in Madison Square Garden. This, he hoped to win over the East by doing this, win over the skeptical New Yorkers.
And he was a great orator, so I'm assuming he was trusting a lot in the impact of his speech.
Ironically, this is actually one of the tactical blunders that he makes. Not only does he choose, unfortunately, one of the hottest days of the year, making New York, Madison Square Garden perhaps the most dangerous spot in the United States on the night of the speech, but he also makes the decision, because he's been accused of being a demagogue, he decides to read his speech from a sheaf of papers. And instead of using biblical imagery like the cross of gold speech that won him the nomination, very dry, almost academic language, and New Yorkers did not come to hear this. And so within minutes of the speech, thousands began to leave the garden.
Well, it also must have been very hot in the garden. It wasn't an air-conditioned room.
Absolutely. And New Yorkers knew that they could simply read the sheaf of papers in the newspapers the next day. They came to be entertained. They came to see one of the stars of the hour. And when Bryan didn't deliver, it was so dangerously hot in the garden. Absolutely. People began leaving in droves.
Where was William McKinley, his opponent, during all of this?
William McKinley was doing a much more traditional campaign, his front porch campaign, literally meeting people on the front porch in Canton, Ohio, instead of going out to see the crowds. The crowds were brought to him in very carefully managed and orchestrated visits from all across the country.
Well, Canton, Ohio can get pretty hot. And the Republican convention had been in St. Louis, which can get even hotter. Had there been no problems in other cities?
Oh, this was a heat wave that wasn't just confined to New York. In many ways, like our heat waves that we've been having this summer, this really covered perhaps the eastern third of the country, east of the Mississippi. So St. Louis, Chicago, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Philadelphia. If 1,300 people died in New York, I mean, you have to multiply this perhaps exponentially to take into account absolutely so much of the country was affected by this.
So what happened at the Republican convention?
The Republican convention, McKinley won the nomination easily. He was kind of the crown prince, almost more because he was kind of the tariff guy. 1896 is 3 years into a terrible economic crisis, a Great Depression for the 1890s. McKinley is nominated by the Republicans because he represents sound fiscal system, a high tariff wall around the United States that will protect domestic manufacturers.
The president was Grover Cleveland?
Grover Cleveland, that's
so
right.
So it was, again, an anti-democratic election.
Absolutely. The Democrats probably, as soon as the economic crisis hit, were probably going to lose the election. And then Grover Cleveland goes on in 1893 to split the Democrats between gold Democrats and people like Bryan, who are silver Democrats.
My guest is Edward P. Cohn, K-O-H-N. His book, Hot Time in the Old Town, The Great Heat Wave of 1896 and the Making of Theodore Roosevelt. Well, Theodore Roosevelt wasn't even running in this election. He wouldn't become president until McKinley was assassinated in 1901. So you say he was out on Long Island during all of this?
During most of it. I mean, first of all, he was actually ill during much of the heat wave. And also,
he was a sickly person. We think of him as this robust rough rider. The guy went out shooting, but he'd had all sorts of illnesses over his lifetime.
That's right, especially childhood asthma, which living in the city can contribute to. If you have the means to remove your family from the city during summer times, not just because of the heat, but because of cholera epidemics, you will do this because this might literally save the lives of your family. But he was in the city for some of the heat wave and took some of the most important steps.
And wasn't he called President Roosevelt at the time for other reasons?
Yeah, he wasn't police chief. He was the president of the Board of Police Commissioners, which is an appointed board. It's like an oversight committee of the police department to make sure that hirings and firings are based on merit and not on your political connections.
Which put him in charge of security for the William Jennings Bryan event at Madison Square Garden.
That's right. He had absolutely a very good excuse to be at the garden on the night of the speech, but he didn't go to the speech that night. But again, perhaps not for political reasons, the Republican Roosevelt staying away, but probably more for family and health reasons.
You're right that Roosevelt was actually somewhat unpopular when he started off as president of the Board of Commissioners. What had he done to lose favor?
One of the things he did, as you say, you know, he is a reformer. He waged a crusade to close the saloons in New York on Sundays. There was a law that said you had to close saloons. This was ignored, and worse than ignored, it was applied selectively. It was the kind of crux of corruption and police corruption that the police could come to your saloon and say, well, you're not supposed to be open today. Pay us a bribe, or we're going to close you down.
And the chief of police was taking in big money?
The chief of police, by his own admission, when Roosevelt became police commissioner, was worth $300,000, maybe $6 million in today's money. And so Roosevelt understood right from the beginning, cleaning up the police is key to cleaning up city politics.
And was he able to do that?
By the time he left, the New York City police was much more professional than when he left it. At the same time, he was in kind of a nasty dispute with one of his fellow commissioners that kind of deadlocked the New York City police. But this was a problem for New York, obviously, well into the 20th century.
How did the city react when it saw so many people dying as a result of this heat wave?
You know, in the decades before the New Deal, before the Great Society, government at all levels, federal, state, city, they reject any responsibility for intervention to the economy, intervening to save people's lives, to give food to the hungry. And so the city does virtually nothing during this crisis.
So the Tea Party was running New York City at the time?
There's just, you know, anybody calling for government intervention for these kind of things, giving things away, is considered pretty radical in 1896.
But public servants probably were among the dying.
Yeah, but really, I mean, there were some people in the coroner's office. There were, yes, some heads of corporations, doctors, lawyers who died. But really, the majority of the deaths, the average person who died was the working poor of the Lower East Side.
And you said that they didn't open up the parks, although it was being proposed.
It was being proposed. A lot of the newspapers were calling for this to be done. Finally, at the end, on the last day of the heat wave, when the mayor says, well, yes, we are now officially opening the parks, a lot of officials are saying, well, actually, we had been doing this all the time. We just didn't tell anybody. So even the beat policemen who were kicking people out of the parks at night said, well, we didn't know anything about this.
How did Roosevelt personally work to protect citizens from the heat?
One of the things that he did, this is why I think this is part of the making of Theodore Roosevelt as a progressive reformer, he championed the idea for the city to give away free ice. And this is at a time when ice is this life-saving luxury that so many New Yorkers can't afford. To propose that the government do anything like this is a pretty radical idea, to give away ice. He's doing this because there is an ice trust in the city that has jacked up the price of ice. So this is Roosevelt for the first time being a trust buster. He also, I think what most impressed me, after the ice was distributed, he took it upon himself, you know, Gramercy Park-born, Harvard-educated Roosevelt, to tour some of the worst back alleys of the tenement districts to see how people were using the ice. So he saw for himself the suffering of the urban poor, and how many American presidents, besides perhaps Barack Obama and Roosevelt, have done this.
And he broke the price fixing of this company called Morse's Consolidated Ice.
That's right, that had bought up perhaps 75% of ice distribution in the city.
There was also a program to flush the streets. What did that involve?
Yeah, this was the brainchild of the Commissioner of Public Works, perhaps another hero of the heat wave, a department head who took upon himself to do something. And it was something so basic, just taking a gang of men with a hose, hooking it up to the hydrant, and flushing, watering down the steaming, searing asphalt streets. And observers at the time who were there watching this said you could feel the temperatures in the Lower East Side going down several degrees.
Well, in later years, it was almost guaranteed during a heat wave that we would see two pictures on the front page of the tabloids. One was an egg that was cooking on the sidewalk, and the other was the opening of the hydrants. Were they opening the hydrants then?
This wasn't really something that you could do just with your hands. Nobody had wrenches. So this wasn't really kind of the typical image of a heat wave in 1896.
Well, we've been talking about this whole thing as something that boosted Roosevelt's political career. How did it do that? Was he being given a lot of credit for the positive things that were happening?
No, really. I don't think this is the making of Theodore Roosevelt. This is something that put votes in his pocket and catapulted him to the White House. The people in the Lower East Side, working immigrants, are not going to be voting for brownstone Republican Roosevelt. I think this is the making of Roosevelt, you know, 5 years from the White House, as the dominant figure of the progressive era that he's about to become.
But how does he wind up becoming vice president?
He resists becoming vice president. After one of the things he's counting on in the 1896 election is he's going to work for a McKinley victory so he can get a new posting in Washington. He becomes Assistant Secretary of the Navy after McKinley wins. He resigns that post to enlist with the Rough Riders during the Spanish-American War. And as soon as he sets foot back in New York City, he's offered the nomination for governor.
You're right that his work during the heat wave stuck with him even decades later. In what way?
And one thing he immediately does when he's governor, he becomes a major champion of tenement reform, real reform for changing these horrible tenements that were so squalid and life-threatening. Even later, almost two decades later, when he writes his memoirs, he writes very detailed, vivid images of what he remembers from that summer.
Well, hadn't he written it all down in his diary?
His diaries only really are boyhood diaries. He doesn't have diaries from later on. So much of what goes into his memoirs later on are his personal memories, and a lot of them are actually kind of flawed memories.
Now, did what happened in 1896 change the way the city dealt with extreme heat after that?
Not really. And perhaps, again, this is the nature of heat waves, that they tend to flee our collective imagination so quickly. There is some flushing of the streets done, but the city giving away free ice doesn't happen again until over two decades later.
You live in Ankara, Turkey. What would happen during a heat wave there?
Probably not too much. And most people in a developing country do not have access to air conditioning. Nowadays in Ankara, I hear from my wife that the temperature has been over 100 degrees. And absolutely, just like what's happening in Russia, I guarantee you that there's a huge section of Europe where a killer heat wave is striking.
Edward Cohn will be giving a talk and signing books tonight at 6:30 at the Lower East Side Tenement Museum. That's at 108 Orchard Street at Delancey. To RSVP or to get more details, go to our show page at wnyc.org. The book, Hot Time in the Old Town, The Great Heat Wave of 1896 and the Making of Theodore Roosevelt. It's published by Basic Books. Thank you so much for being with us
today. Thank you, Leonard.